Listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio AM 820 brings you Foundations in Faith. Join Monsignor Frank Lane as he offers insights into the readings heard at Mass. And now, Foundations in Faith with Monsignor Frank Lane.
This is Father Frank Lane, and we're continuing our program, Foundations in Faith. We're going to look today, again, following in the Gospel according to St. Mark, chapter 12, verses 38 to 44. There are two distinct parts to this gospel. The first is dealing with the scribes who like to walk about in long robes and so forth. And the second is about the widow putting her coin in the temple treasury. And while there is in some way a connection between these two pieces, these two parts of the gospel, we have to look and see what that connection really is. In the first part, in his teaching, Jesus said, "Beware of the scribes who like to walk about in long robes to be greeted obsequiously in the market squares, to take the front seats in the synagogues and the places of honor at banquets. These are the men who swallow the property of widows while making a show of lengthy prayers. The more severe will be the sentence that they receive." This is one of the times when Jesus is incredibly harsh. And he's incredibly harsh toward an interesting phenomenon of the way in which religious people can think of themselves, imagine themselves, and in some way, shape, or form to identify themselves. Basically, it is the scribes here, and he does this with the scribes and the Pharisees without ever condemning the whole cast of scribe or Pharisee. He doesn't do that. But what he does is he said there is an element within that which is distasteful, hypocritical, and worthy of condemnation. In many ways, so we could very easily pick this up and take this to the whole notion of clericalism within the Catholic Church. I'm not sure exactly what the parameters of that word really are, but certainly there is a traditional notion where someone wallows in their position within the community rather than accepting it for what it is, living as it should be, and performing the responsibilities accompanied with it. They kind of take it as kind of a personal gift that they can use at will. But they're not the only ones that do that. There is a certain amount of what we might call clericalism also. Among all the peoples of the church, those, and especially it manifests itself in the self-congratulatory behavior. That's basically what clericalism is self-congratulatory behavior. It is like the old English nursery rhyme about little Jack Horner just stuck in his thumb and pulled out a plum and said, "What a good boy am I." I think that that's kind of folk wisdom, which in many ways reflects the very thing that Jesus is talking about in the first part of this gospel. He's not condemning honor being given to temple officials or to the chief priests or the scribes if they are performing their proper duty. What he is condemning is them assuming personal accolades for something that they carry in representation of the community and for the service of others. A priest who becomes a priest just because he thinks, and this is not so much true anymore, but it certainly was in the past, because somehow or other he'll be a very important public figure. Will God deliver us from those kinds of clergy? Of course. We see it in the behavior. We see that kind of how people use that kind of thing to their advantage. If you start reading the activities and the behavior of Theodore McCarrick, you see how this was kind of a political tool that he used in order to undermine the magisterium of the church. it really kind of becomes alarming that such a thing was able to take place. But it is the very thing that Jesus is talking about here, the one who wants to become the important and the powerful person, because in becoming important and powerful, they have the right to coerce others to serve their individual and personal purposes, and to aggrandize themselves and oftentimes to enrich themselves. So we can't just sit back and say, well, you know, that we therefore can't be respectful of the priesthood or the episcopacy or the religious life within the church because Jesus tells us not to in the gospel. No, he doesn't. He tells us to be discerning about that and to be able to spot improper and behavior and in the ranks of all Christians. But we know ourselves there are certainly communities of lay Christians who spend their entire life congratulating themselves for being lay Christians and presuming to assume to themselves all sorts of privileges and rights which they simply, which God does not give them, which maybe in secular society they would have, I don't know. But certainly they're not part of the structure of the pilgrim people of God. We are not, very few of us, if we look honestly at our lives, are able to walk into the future, walk into, for instance, an encounter with death as self-congratulatory beings. If anyone can do that, well, maybe, you know, St. Paul had a real sense of his own sanctity, and the argument is, too, that Thérèse of Lisieux also kind of understood her saintliness. But how rare that is when that is authentic. We probably have many people who are aware of their saintliness or who are taken up by their saintliness. But chances are it doesn't manifest itself or is not confirmed as such by the world in which they live, the church to which they belong, and the God whom they seek to serve. That self-congratulatory Christianity is really very unattractive and always false. So what Jesus is saying now is that to be a member of the community, to be a participating member of the community, to function within our proper roles within the community is never a case for self-aggrandizement. It is always a case for humility, for service. And following up on the gospel that we had in the last time, of the idea of Jesus reciting the Shema Israel when asked, as a matter of fact, what is the greatest of the law? Love the Lord your God and love your neighbor as yourself. You are not, you self-congratulatory people probably really love neither God nor their neighbor. They simply love themselves. And self-love is not something that's very attractive, actually. To love oneself because God loves us is one thing, but to love ourselves because of how wonderful we are is quite something else, I would suspect. At any rate, then, the second part of the gospel is, after he had said this, and after he had admonished those who were misusing their office within the covenantal community, he sits down opposite the treasury and watches the people putting money into the treasury. Many of the rich put in a great deal of money. A poor widow came and put in 2 small coins, the equivalent of a penny. And then he called his disciples and said to them, I tell you solemnly, this poor widow has put more in than all who have contributed to the treasury, for they have all put in money that they from their abundance, but she, from the little she had, has put in everything she possessed, all she had to live on. This is a follow-up to the story of the real meaning of service within the church. Part of the edge to this story for the audience, especially for the Pharisees, is that while in the Old Testament there was the notion, for instance, women could inherit and daughters could inherit and wives could inherit their husband's estates and so forth. During the rabbinical age, the Pharisees changed that. And so their whole idea was that a widow could not inherit her husband's estate. And so if her husband died, she had to remarry immediately or live her life in penury and as a beggar and so forth. Daughters the same way could not inherit from their father's estates, so they too had to marry. And if they were very young, they then had to be taken in and cared for by other married relatives. It was a hardship for women, and it was something that was very wrong. The early Christian community reversed that. In fact, as they made the order of widows a special and graced group within the early Christian church, and the widows themselves were therefore people who gave service and care to others within the community. They were a functioning and a charitable organization. So the early Christian community kind of reversed this misogynistic kind of legislation from the Pharisaical rabbis, returning to the more natural order of things where human beings have dignity and human beings can share in the goodness and the abundance of those who wish them to and who share their wealth with them and their goodness with them and so forth. He went on then to say that's why this widow is in a particular plight, because as identified as a widow, she had not remarried, which meant that she lived in penury, which meant that she had nothing. And so as he's watching people put money into the temple treasury, what he sees is that the wealthy are being very generous. He's not saying they're not being generous. But he is saying what they're giving is kind of from an abundance. It doesn't take something out of the very core, the very center of their life. It's a wonderful thing that they so desire to share what they have. But in many, many ways, sometimes, obviously sometimes, it's for show. Sometimes it's for whatever other motivations people have. Many times it's from very wonderful and good motivations that people have to help the work of the church, to help the work of the Lord, to be kind to those who are in greater need. So he's not condemning it at all. What he really is doing is making a contrast in order to correct the foolish behavior that he has become aware of in the first part of the gospel, the self-congratulatory religious person. For us, we could say it's a condemnation in the first part of the gospel for the self-congratulatory Christian or the self-congratulatory Christian community. What he's basically saying is it doesn't mean much. And he says the more severe will be the sentence that they receive. Because, as he goes on in other parts of the gospel to say, they have already received their reward by considering themselves to be the righteous. Now what he's saying, what is the real disposition toward other people? What is the real disposition toward the living God? What is the real disposition toward love the God, the Lord your God, with your whole heart, your whole mind, your whole soul? That's what he's using the widow to demonstrate. It is her whole heart, her whole mind, her whole soul, which she is giving into the temple treasury, which means to the Lord and to her neighbor. She is fulfilling the great commandment. And while the others might be admirable for the goodness that they do, this is the absolute. Love the Lord your God with your whole heart, your whole mind, your whole soul, and your neighbor as yourself. That's what's being demonstrated in the generosity of the widow. The two coins, the equivalent of a penny. And that was all that she had to live on. Nothing is more total as a gift, nothing more complete than that, than to give away everything you have to the Lord, that it might be used also for the sake of others. So that the gospel then has this kind of narrative which then breaks into another narrative. So first in this narrative of Mark's gospel that we've been looking at, there is the great commandment, love the Lord your God, your neighbor as yourself. Then there is that kind of vignette of what it doesn't mean. It doesn't mean being a self-congratulatory member of the covenantal community. It doesn't mean it's all about me. It doesn't mean it's all about us. It means somehow or other this is something which Jesus himself, with great severity, condemns. Then he moves into what does it mean then? How do you apply the great commandment? What does it mean? And he uses the story of the poor widow, showing both the benevolence of other people, but the absoluteness of the widow's gift, the absoluteness of the totality of the generosity of the widow. It's a striking example for him to use in the discourse that he's having with the crowds and with the scribes and Pharisees. It's striking because of the plight of widows in Israel, because through the rabbinical lawmaking, they were the destitute ones. If they are identified as a widow, then that identification then makes them, means they did not remarry after their first husband's death or their husband's death. And it means, therefore, that being unmarried, the law has forbidden them to inherit their husband's wealth. And so they now live in destitution. Let us kind of reflect on all of this in relationship to the present time and the world in which we live. These are great themes. These are phenomenal themes that come to us out of the gospel, deep and profound teaching. But it's based on a very, very realistic and wonderful, wonderful revelation. And that is the purpose of human life itself. The purpose of human life itself is to love. A word riddled with cultural connotations, many of which are distasteful. But at its core, what does it mean? What does it mean to truly love another human person or truly love the Lord our God? It demands in some way a giving away of the self to them. That in any marriage that works, there is no question but what each of the parties give up something of themselves for the sake of the other, with the interesting outcome being that their life is fuller than it would have been had they never given that away. That, as a matter of fact, in the sacrament of marriage, in a sacramental marriage, sacrifice is at the core of it. And sacrifice can come to us and look to us like some kind of a negative reality, that it is in some way a punishment of some kind or an affliction of some kind. Not so. That suffering in many ways is what opens the human heart to grow, what opens the human heart to allow the human person to become more complete, and therefore, in a sense, to attain a greater fulfillment and a greater happiness. It's part of the paradox of Christianity. And that's why, for instance, in many ways, one of the things that I think is very important for whatever what I think is worth, but I think that couples preparing for marriage should have a common prayer life centered around the crucifix, because it's not that they have to suffer physically and give their life for the sake of the other, but it is that they have to understand from the crucifix what it means to love. And the idea of the crucifix is not the model and crucified and mangled body of the Lord. The idea of the crucifix is this is how much God loves you, that he allows this to happen to himself for your sake. It is a gift, and it models the truth of the exchange and the interchange between human persons when we speak about love. It is the same way, for instance, if parents love their children, how much of themselves do they give away for the sake of that child? When, in fact, in old age, a child says, I love my parent, how much are they willing to give of themselves for the sake of that parent? These are all part of the drama, the story of the real depth in the very center of the human person of the meaning of love. And so that It is not just a romantic concept, or in the modern age, it's oftentimes simply a physical phenomenon that people speak of. That's not what it's all about at all. It is about this losing of the self into the other for the sake of the other, through which the person themselves actually becomes more than they had been before. And the whole life, death, and resurrection of Jesus as a human reveals that to us, that in his gift of himself, in his teaching, in his love, in his companionship, in his healings, in all of that, the suffering, the death, the crucifixion, but the resurrection follows all of that. And that's the drama of Christian reality. Through the power of the love of God and through the power that he shares with us in our human love, we are able actually to come into the fulfillment, the completion, the resurrection, the total resurrection of ourselves as whole human persons. So that when, in fact, he chides those who try to take from the modern world their meaning and their importance and their self of well-being and all those kinds of things, when he attempts to do that, when people attempt to do that, he shows the futility and the silliness of it. And he uses the example of the scribes who like to walk around in long robes to be greeted obsequiously in the market squares and so on and so forth. And then, once he puts that aside and once that's out of the way, he then turns and says, now this is what it means to love God and to love your neighbor with your whole heart, your whole soul, your whole strength, your whole mind. This is what it means. Give yourself away for the sake of the love you have for God and neighbor. That is what it means. To what degree can we do that? He says, look, the wealthy, they're doing that to some degree, and that's commendable and that's noble, but it's not the complete giving away. Now, in our lives, therefore, as disciples of Christ and as believing Christians, this has to gnaw at us from the inside out. How much of myself have I given away for the sake of another, for the sake of others? Have I been totally generous with my life? Husbands and wives have to ask themselves that over and over again, as do mothers and fathers, as do grown children. So too do priests and religious, and so too do the hierarchy of the church. How much have I given away, and how much have I used my position in this world to aggrandize myself and to, in some way, shape, or form, push other people around? How much of that is there? How much of that is, wow, look at me? How much of that is the self-congratulatory Christian, the self-congratulatory Christian community, which behaves in nefarious ways and then says, what a good boy am I? These are the things that we grapple with and struggle with in the contemporary church. This lack of love, this total consumption of position and power, and this total consumption with self, lies at the heart of all of the abuses within our society. Whether it's the sexual abuse of children or other people, whether it's the economic exploitation of others, whether it's the dismissal of the needs of others, whether it's the categorization of others, whether it's the hatred of others, whatever it is, it is not part of this very deep reality of the Christian life. The poor widow served the Lord by giving everything she had into the temple treasury, the home of the Lord, the place of the Lord. What was it to be used for? The maintenance of the temple and the well-being of those who were in need. She therefore gave herself completely to God and to her neighbor. In our lives, then, when we reflect, when we pray, when we kind of seek in this life, we come to crises, we come to times of meaning, times of what is this all about, and why do I have to go through this, and how harsh this has been, and how terrible my failures, and all of these kinds of things. These are all human preparation for the great sacrifice, for the great giving away of the self. For we first have to realize that the only true value we have inside of ourselves is that which comes to us from the love of others. We know this, for instance, in the whole psychological arena, the whole psychological field. A child who has never been loved usually is a very disruptive and dysfunctional element within human society, very dangerous element within human society. The degree of love that we have received from others that has opened ourselves to acknowledge the great gift inside of ourselves from the love of the giving God, this then becomes for us somehow or other the formation of our interior personhood. And it behooves us to use this which we have received for the fulfillment and the filling up of the lives of other people, the giving to them of those things which have been given to us, not to hoard them, not to congratulate ourselves on them, not to say, gee, look at me, isn't, aren't I great? No, it is to say, if I have gifts, if I do, and we all do, those are for the sake of others. And our life, in order for its meaning to be fulfilled, must be a process as long as possible to give of that to others. There may be a time, and certainly this is part of the tradition of the church also, where people say, I have come to the point in my life where I have been given the grace by God that I can give my life to no other but Him. But even in so doing, even in the hermitages and the cloistered convents and monasteries of the church, the prayer rises up to the Lord for the sake of others, for the church. That as a matter of fact, these realities lie at the very heart of the church. They are kind of, you know, that area which pumps the divine grace, the divine blood through the veins of the whole church. That it is not a selfish vocation, and it is not a vocation of withdrawal from others or withholding from others. It is in some stage of life, at some have come to the point where God alone is all they have left to give. They give to Him alone. But through doing that, they also give great abundance of goodness and prayer and grace to others. So that as, in fact, we reflect upon the widow's mite, as we tend to call it, and the prelude to that, the condemnation of the self-congratulatory Christian, let us ask the Lord, to what degree have we been generous with all that we have? Not just our material good, but our heart as well. How much love and care have we given to others? How much understanding and empathy have we been able to share with others? How much have we been able to allow our lives to become in some way a reflection of the crucified Christ, the one who gives all for the sake of the Father and gives all for the sake of the other?
Foundations in Faith is a production of listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820. Archives of Foundations in Faith are available at stgabrielradio.com.